Welcome to Combox Live. This is Bayram and my dad, Rob Barron.
Thanks, Bobs.
All right. Well, we decided that intros weren't as good when we did them, so we had Rob Barron's young one do it for us today. And I'm still processing the events of today. Of course, a lot has happened in cricket. You know, India crashed out of the Women's T20 World Cup. Ireland beat India in a T20 series. And stuff happened at Trent Bridge. You know, Rachin scored 94. Daryl Mitchell unbeaten 100. Jofra 4 for. None of that matters, Rob Barron, because Benjamin Andrew Stokes, first of his name, made in Christchurch, forged at Durham, has hung up his boots in international cricket with immediate effect. And I still don't know how to process these feelings, because if you guys don't know, I'm a big Stokes fanboy. Rob Barron is a big Stokesy critic, and we'll take it from there.
It's very strange, isn't it, the way it all happened. It's not really surprising, and the manner of the announcement was surprising at the time, but having now looking back 4 hours, 5 hours later, it's not that surprising. And then him opening the batting and batting like a maniac is also not surprising. But if you take all of those things out of context, it's all completely mad, isn't it? But that's what his captaincy and his tenure and all of them have been for quite some time now. His innings was basically a microcosm of his England career. Like, he's got lots of talent. He chose to do the wrong thing at the wrong time, was really lucky at the start of his innings, and ended up playing an innings that was probably unforgettable and at the same time not the thing that his team needed whatsoever. So, yeah, I mean, where do you want to start, Barron?
Well, I mean, I often think about Stokes the cricketer, because I can't defend Stokes the human, and we'll come to Stokes the human, right? Like, we separate the art from the artist. But for me, he's one of my favorite players because I simply loved watching him play cricket, whether he's bowling, batting or fielding, a complete warrior sort of character. Sure, he loved, you know, drama, and he knew where the cameras were. Those are very Stokesy things. But a test career which spanned 122 games, so 122 tests is a lot for an all-rounder. Over 7,000 runs, I think 7,273 runs to end with, and 252 wickets to his name. His batting average is 34.46, and his bowling average is a smidgen under 31, right? So those numbers don't scream legend or greatness, right? We agree over there. But watching him play cricket was just such a visceral experience. Like, it was box office. And whether he would fail or succeed, you would have your eyes glued to the television set when Ben Stokes was just at it. And for me, like, you know, in this last decade, he's been one of the most enjoyable cricketers to just follow in general, because there's always some story revolving around Ben Stokes. And I think, you know, we often talk about him as a moments cricketer, but years later, when people will look at that record, all right, he's not averaging 35 with the bat. He's not averaging less than 30 with the ball. So why was he special? They won't get it because they haven't seen him play. And that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I think that's quite a good place to be at, really, because I don't sit in the pub and talk to my friends about cricket and reel out what everyone's average is, right? I don't really care and never have done. And what I will say about Ben Stokes is he has had a very entertaining career, right? He's been box office and he has made the England team more entertaining while he's being captain. I think that is completely fair, and that is a good legacy to leave. Just that by itself is good enough. The fact that during his captaincy, England have lost some games they should have won is kind of neither here nor there when you look at the whole thing. The fact that his box office and most famous innings were all really lucky can be overlooked, because you don't show the drops necessarily in the highlights, or you don't show the silly shots. You show the bits where he's got England over the line, which he definitely has, and he might say, well, I don't care whether it's lucky. You have to be lucky in sport just as you do in life, right? The thing that where I'm not in the fanboy camp with you is that I prefer, and I like loads of cricketers like Stokes, you know, the flawed geniuses who don't bring necessarily all their talent out. Zidane is the one in football that springs to mind, and Paul Gascoigne, and again, separating the art from the artist, is guys that have all this talent and only really use it at its peak when the game is at its biggest, right? I think Stokes is pretty good at that. I love all that about Stokes. I love his captaincy. I like the aggression. I like the let's try and win the games and not lose them and all that sort of stuff, and not draw them and all that sort of stuff. I'm with all that. But with all my heroes throughout sport, the ones I love the most are the ones that are true to themselves and are real. And if they are a bit of a swine or a bit of a bad person, they embrace that side of their character and they run with it. Whereas Stokes has spent his whole career trying to spin using PR, using Oscar-winning directors and Amazon's millions to project an image of himself which isn't true. So isn't that he is not the person that he wants us all to think he is. And again, another really good example from this game, and you can always just pull it back to cricket with Stokes, right, rather than talking about the other stuff. In this game today, Mitchell got battered by England and stood up and was counted for his team. He got battered. He got whacked on the arm several times. He got whacked in the head. And they kept whacking him, and he sat there for 240 balls, and they didn't get him out, Bayram, and he scored 100 runs. That's what I want, right? That was real, and it was true to him. He wasn't pretending to be injured all the way through. He wasn't asking for the train every 5 seconds. He wasn't shouting to the crowd via various PR people, I'm really hurt here, and I really, really want you to notice, but I'm going to stay out there and get the job done. He just quietly went about his business and put his team in a very good position to win the match. Stokes just bought a complete circus with him today, as he has done throughout his career, and he has been the one with the top hat on, right? If he was going to be a bastard and then embrace that side of him and come out as kind of one of cricket's sort of pantomime villains, I would have been all in with him. But the fact that he's tried to pretend that he's not, that he's some sort of hero and lovely man and all the rest of it, I don't buy it, and I never will buy it. He's retired again. You know, he's retired from formats and come back before. This may well not be the end, but it's almost certainly the end of the current version of England. I'm very surprised if his head is the only one that is rolling this week. I'd be very surprised. And by the time Pakistan, by the time your team comes to town, Bayram, who knows what the England setup is going to look like, because it's not going to look like what it looks like.
I mean, we've got all night to talk about the PR aspect of things and Stokes the human and Stokes the captain. But I just want to draw a bit of attention to Stokes the cricketer before we get to all of that stuff, right? There are only two Test cricketers in history who have done the double of 7,000 plus runs and 250 plus wickets. It's Ben Stokes and Jacques Callis. And I think that is quite admirable. And one thing that I've always loved about Stokes the cricketer is that he leaves everything out there. Even if he has like a ligament in the knee, you know, kind of attached with a rubber band, or he has to kind of bring in a spare shoulder to bowl all of those overs and those long spells, Ben Stokes tried really, really hard. And you know, he will go down as one of those fields cricketers or moments cricketers because he has a lot of moments. Now, we're not going to waste our breath on Headingley. And I know Rob Barron will say that at Headingley, he could have been run out and LBW. Didn't happen. He wins England that test match. In the 2019 ODI World Cup final, you know, which England won by boundary count, Ben Stokes was the main protagonist for England. And I mean, there were drop catches over there as well. And then he kind of parried one ball to the fence where he was running. That happened. And even in the T20 World Cup final versus Pakistan, he survived Nasim Shah, but then Shaheen gets injured. So there is an element of luck over there. But we often pigeonhole Stokes to these three innings. Let's not forget his maiden test done on that Perth pitch, you know, which had cracks bigger than my butt. And we are talking about a crack of massive proportion. So, you know, you guys don't want to go there, but those cracks were huge. And then there's also the second fastest double 100 versus South Africa at Cape Town, I believe. I watched that innings live. I reckon that was 258 of 198 towards the end. If I'm not mistaken, he gets run out, right? Because I felt really disappointed at the end of it because I was like, oh, damn, he could have scored the fastest triple 100. But that was a great knock.
So that innings was, he was responsible for one of my luckiest ever big loads of money in my whole life, because I had this theory back in the day, which sort of rings true, that if a partnership lasted for ages, then the run out became a more likely dismissal method for the innings to end, right? Because they're like, they can't get them out OBW, they can't get them out bowled, they faced 200 balls each or whatever it was, they're getting tired, run out comes into it. And I just kept backing run out all through the day at 33 to 1 33 to 1, and I was, back then you were allowed to get decent bets on, right? So I had this winning me a lot of money. And if you remember, he chipped the ball to probably the most likely person in the world at the time to catch it, a very, very easy catch, straight to AB de Villiers. It was one of these. And he inexplicably dropped it. Even more inexplicably, Stokes didn't bother to run to the other end because he knew, as we all did, that AB de Villiers was going to catch it. And AB angrily caught the ball on the bounce and threw the stumps down and run him out. So Stokes, despite all the times I bag him, was responsible for an extreme piece of luck. And Bayram, Stokes, whilst I do bag off Stokes for being quite lucky, in life, it is way better to be lucky than anything else. And all of life is luck. Look at all the people, whoever you work for, right? Whoever you work with, there are so many people that have got great jobs just because they're lucky, because they know the right person, they're in the right family, whatever it is.
Sure. I completely hear you, right? There is an element of luck in life, but I'm also a believer in manifestation and fortune favors the brave. I feel like Stokes does kind of create his own luck at times. Maybe he has, you know, really good mental strength. I mean, he has been a fighter and he is a character as well. I think cricket will miss him. Simple as that. I know that you are on the opposite bandwagon over here, but I certainly will miss him. I was looking forward to watch him play versus Pakistan. And you know what's fascinating about him? He was a batting all-rounder for the most part of his career, right? And then his batting regresses big time. Like, Stokes should have ended up with an average of 37, 38 easy, right? Mm. And towards the end, he is one of England's best and most reliable bowlers. In this very test match, he's taken 6 wickets and a fourfer, and he's crossed that 250 wickets mark, right? So he really gave it everything after those operations on the knee and whatnot. And I really came to appreciate Ben Stokes as someone who will always try to give whatever utility is available. Because towards the end, he was probably a number 7, number 8 batter. And I might be being generous over here, right? Ever since that fourth innings 100 at Lord's in the Johnny Bairstow test versus Australia in the Ashes, where Ben Stokes scores like 155, he hasn't really done particularly well with the bat in the Test arena. But then he transforms into one of England's best bowlers, post Jimmy Anderson. So I think that, you know, there wasn't a lack of trying with Ben Stokes. And for me, you know, in his generation, Stokesy is the best pace bowling all-rounder in Test cricket. There are other names in white ball, and people will make a case that Jadeja is better than Stokes in Test cricket, and there is solid rationale for that as well. But for me, he's a big match player. He was a clutch player. Maybe he was lucky, but he was still there at the end, and he, you know, got England over the line, and that is his, you know, biggest bit as far as legacy is concerned. I know there's a lot of questionable stuff, and that is also part of his legacy. But the brightest spot or brightest little paragraph in the Ben Stokes book is his clutchness. And he did win England games, important games, and I don't think we can overlook that.
Cricket boards actually make watching their games almost impossible. I spend almost as much time trying to find where I can view it as I do actually following the action. That is why I use NordVPN. They let me find all the cricket I want to watch while protecting me from the nasty side of the internet. Nord will free your cricket matches. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/goodareas to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 additional months on top. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Watch every match with NordVPN.
So I agree with most of that. The thing that annoys me is when you saw that innings at Perth, you're like, okay, he's a bit like Bethell's recently in the test match. Mm. You're like, okay, well, he's definitely got the game. We know this now. Now, can he fulfill his potential? The answer to that is probably no. And he missed a lot of important cricket. You say he's clutch, but he wasn't able to turn up for some of our most important series and a World Cup and an Ashes because of his off-field nonsense and because of his temper, but, you know, smashing his hand through a locker. So he, a decent proportion of his career, he wasn't able to show us if he could fulfill his potential because he wasn't allowed to play entirely because of his own shortcomings, right? So
I'm going to stop you right there. Sorry, Rob. I know that you were great at chronological events. Can you run us through Stokes punching a locker, him getting into trouble on the A tour, Stokes at Bristol, the embargo incident, and then most recently, Stokesy in the naughtiest nightclub in Chelsea?
his first thing, I think it was 2011, it came back. He, as any young man or young woman can do, he got into trouble on a night out when he was drunk and eventually was let off by the police, right? I think he was arrested and then let go, right? I've got plenty of people I've seen that have done that, and that's fine. You know, we'll give him a pass for that one. Then he was sent home from a Lions tour this stayed with him, didn't it? For not complying to the rules of the tour, staying out too late, drinking, and, you know, not fulfilling his role as a cricketer that is aspiring to play for England. So he was sent home from the Lions tour. Now, this is where the Ricky Ponting comparison comes in, is you have a chance here. This is a slap on the wrist or a shake of the head or whatever. If you go down this path, you're not going to end up having a great career for England. Sort yourself out, mate. He then doesn't do so. He then has the putting his fist through a locker because he was angry. He missed a tour because of that, and then he missed an entire World Cup because of that. Then fast forward to the embargoes thing where he comes across terribly badly. I don't care what the courts say. I've seen the footage and read the incident reports and all that. He acts terribly badly in that, and he smashes people in the head and all that sort of thing, and leaves him in the street while his mate's running in, kicking them and saying he wasn't there. Alex Hales, well done, mate. And he gets away with that because he's got really good lawyers, and you know, he's found not guilty on some ridiculous proviso that he was looking after other people, which may or may not be true. So he's obviously done like that's bad, and for that he missed some cricket while he was. And he missed an entire Ashes tour because he was being investigated and being tried in the criminal courts, right? So that cost England, that has already cost England a World Cup, I think a West Indies series and an Ashes series, which England will tell you is the most important thing in English cricket. Then he knuckles down and ostensibly behaves himself. I'm reliably informed that there are plenty of things that were swept under the carpet during the next few years. The Harry Brook thing happened, nothing to do with Stokes, but that's a wake up to all of them. Behave yourselves, behave yourselves, behave yourselves. During this time, in this interim, Stokes has time off for his mental health, which, you know, cool. Everybody can have that. And you know, losing a parent or whatever, dreadful stuff. He was then followed around by Amazon during this mental health time off that was paid for, and a documentary done by... what's his name? Sam Mendes did a documentary about him.
Really, really good documentary.
Where he comes across great. And if I get somebody to make a documentary about me, Behram, I will also come across great.
I told you after watching it, I considered chopping off my middle finger, right? I was like, I'll go full Stokesy.
Yeah, I considered chopping off various body parts after watching that as well. And then it fast forward to the latest one. So which has happened in the last 3 weeks. We discussed it at the time. It transpired. Now, we don't know because nothing's come out, but it's probable that Stokes didn't really do much in terms of the incident that happened. The fact that there was an incident, a rugby player throwing punches at Atkinson and hitting the security guy, means that it got out into public, you know, view that there was an incident, and Ben Stokes was out at 3 or maybe 4 in the morning at Chelsea's naughtiest nightclub when he, as captain of England, who has got a rap sheet, as long as my arm, should have been behaving himself. And then there was the big fallout. Now, we don't know what happened. I can guess what happened. Stokes was in his and his supporters, I was thrown under the bus and was like, well, you're on the naughty boy step. You're not going to be captain while we investigate this. You're definitely missing this test match. During which time, I think Stokes, it's been reported, threatened to quit and said, if you're going to do that to me, I'm out. I'm done with you lot. He's had things in that documentary. He speaks about how he says F off to the suits and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. Won't post for pictures with them. Now, as someone who has been pretty well known as anti-establishment myself, I totally get all that. And I'm with Stokes as far as all that goes. And he probably went, I'm not going to bother playing with you lot anymore. I quit. And then they backtracked and said, all right, then if you're going to quit, then we're not going to strip you of the captaincy and we're not going to hang you out to dry. See you, at Trent Bridge for the third test of the series online. Welcome back, Ben. And when he was asked about this, he did the Athers interview and he did the BBC one. He just skirted all the questions, which he's not the first sportsman to do that. No problem with that. But he skirted all the questions. Yeah. That was like,
but you know,
what did you really think?
As someone who has really enjoyed watching him play, you know, you want your heroes to kind of live up to that billing as humans. And I think the biggest issue for me, there are actually a few over here. One is the most recent one. I don't think there was enough accountability from Stokesy in those interviews. And he was sidestepping everything and he just wasn't owning up to much. And I thought that he should have, because what I see is a trend, a repeatable trend, where he just hasn't been a responsible adult, right? And he's gotten himself into these situations over and over again. And I've been pissed drunk at a bar or a nightclub as well in my life. I've never once gotten into a fight. So there is something to do with Ben Stokes' character that ends or makes him end up in these brawls. I'm convinced there is something over there. So there are these three things, right? The lack of accountability, responsibility, the lack of growth, you know, when it comes to taking responsibility, and then the penchant to end up in a fight. I think these things have held him back a lot. But like I said, I don't have many defenses for Stokes the human. If anything, it probably holds him back a bit. But then there's the whole Mad Max nature of English all-rounders. But to your point, Freddie, let's take him out of this, right? Freddie was just someone who liked to have a bit of fun and he never got into major trouble. Beefy, He owned it. He was the bastard. Stokesy, not so much. Never owned it. And he always wanted to project himself as the hero, but ends up as the anti-villain, or anti-hero rather. And there is a big PR machinery behind this, and the ECB has been at the forefront of this as well, even though he told Lord Patel to fuck off at one point, which is great. I love that. And I think that, you know, because he is undoubtedly one of the most important English cricketers of this generation, he doesn't eclipse Joe Root. I think Joe Root is up top, and Cook is even ahead of Stokesy, at least for me. But because he was that poster boy of English cricket and, you know, baseball and everything, they went leaps and bounds to just protect his image. And he was completely on board with that. And I can understand why that comes across as inauthentic. And that needs to be discussed, right? The PR machinery was a big part of his career as well.
Yeah, and continues to be so. And I think the last fortnight, that PR machine has been in full swing. And they were basically very happy for the narrative to come out that it's ECB suits versus Ben Stokes, because the public will always go with the player in, as far as that goes. And it was.
You should have taken
report.
A look at the English media. Rob, yeah. You and I and Mark Butcher were probably the only people who said that, look, if this was a one-off, it was different. This is a trend. Everyone else said, oh, he just broke a curfew. But he didn't just break a curfew, did he? Like,
he broke
this
the curfew
has been
that he made.
Going on and on and on with England. If it's not Stokesy, it's someone else. Like, this was so repeatable that at this point, you know, you have to understand why the curfew existed in the first place. So it's not just someone breaking a curfew. There's a lot more to it. And one question that I have for you. Do you think the latest incident at Chelsea's naughtiest nightclub, did that spur him on to retire this early? I think it definitely played a part.
Yeah, I think the reaction to it did. And had that incident not happened, he wouldn't have had this ECB versus Stokes come right back to the surface again. It would have been... What they've conveniently forgotten about is they're going to lose a test match series at home to New Zealand amongst all of this. And one of those tests, the second test, which England lost, a big part of that is because they didn't get the best team on the park because of that incident, right? Also because Ollie Robinson and all the rest of it, we'll get into that tomorrow. But yeah, this whole last few weeks has been managed by Stokes' PR lot. So then Stokes has a big long think, decides that the announcement is going to be made. So if you're deciding off the cuff in front of your teammates that you're going to jack it in, and this is the bit where you're going to tell them, and you're just saying, right, I've got to tell the lads now, I'm going to jack it in. You probably don't ask someone to film it first, right? And like Saurabh's point today, he's like, well, how many people have had these retirement speeches and made sure they've got someone else to film it first? It then gets conveniently announced. I was watching it on the telly this afternoon during one of Stokes' big long spells just before a tea break. And it was like, and Joffre Archer should have been bowling some of those balls, right? England needed to get rid of that tail and not have the 300 and odd that they're chasing. It would have been much better if it was 250. And at eight down, England had a chance to go bang, bang, and they went Ben Stokes because he wanted to bowl 12 overs in a row or whatever to keep the whole what a hero, what a legend going. And that again is my issue. It's all about the Ben Stokes narrative rather than about the best thing for the English cricket team. And as such, the crowd start going absolutely mental because they hear it, right? They hear it during over 11 of Ben Stokes' spell. He's going to retire just before tea. And the crowd wakes up from its slumber because until that point of the day, it was pretty dull in terms of baseball-type cricket. It was New Zealand grinding England into the dust. The crowd was pretty much silent, you know, just the murmur. And then the crowd starts going nuts, you know, Ben Stokes, what a legend. Everyone's cheering, 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 cheering. And having been to many days of English Test cricket, there is a direct correlation between crowds making loads and loads of noise before a ball is bowled and people getting out when the atmosphere is fever pitch. The atmosphere went to fever pitch. He got rid of one of the tail enders. Can't remember who it was now. Folks, maybe. Nicked him off. And everybody goes absolutely mental. Fair enough, you know, it's a fun thing to do, go to cricket and everyone goes absolutely mental. But this whole thing, which I think him opening the batting in the second innings and everybody batting like an idiot, right? Again, we'll talk about this tomorrow because it's about this game and not about Stokes. Yeah. But Stokes' innings was kind of
the
like...
it's the most Stokes thing to do though, right?
It was an absolute mid-spell, right?
Yeah. And then I'm opening the batting as well on the same day.
Right.
So he does kind of make everything about himself.
That's my issue with the guy, right? And it's not making everything about yourself is fine if you're by far and away the best player, you know, Messi, for example, if you're by far and away the best player and you win the World Cup by yourself with your team, Maradona and all that. Sure, I get it, right? Maradona's probably more guilty of the main character syndrome, but Maradona was the main character by a million miles, as is Messi. You know, Ronaldo's finding out now that he isn't the main character anymore. He's just somebody that stands up front who's 41 years old or whatever. But Stokes is doing it to the detriment of his team's results. And that's not what a captain should do, because they were walking off the plank alongside him today, holding, you know, joint arms and diving off the boat that was sinking, resulting in a home series defeat against New Zealand. Bearing in mind, New Zealand have lost their best player during this series. Yeah. And their best two players from the series as it developed for this game, Matt Henry and Glenn Phillips, right? So they're beset by injuries. They've also got no bowlers left, right? Because they're all getting injured because England are smashing the ball as hard as they can at them. So he drove England off a cliff in his last test, is what happened with Ben Stokes. Barring an utter miracle tomorrow, he drove England off a cliff, and they all went down solemnly on the ship. Well, not solemnly, stupidly on the ship with him, singing sea shanties, and isn't it funny? So there's no way that the status quo remains the same now, Bayram. It can't happen.
If your analogy is a sinking ship, then we can certainly credit Ben Duckett for, you know, ramping some paddles, trying to keep that ship afloat. But anyway, like, I completely hear you. Like I said, for me, watching Stokes play was the joy. That was a visceral experience for me, and there's not much I can say to defend him as a human being or for the decisions that he's made over his career, because some of them have been batshit crazy. I mean, I was on a long drive today. I even mentioned to you guys that, you know, I'll be missing a lot of the action. And I come home and I'm like, okay, he's not only is he retiring, he is opening the batting, right? What the hell is going on? I do not have enough time to process this. But that is what he is. He wants to be the main character, as Rob just told. And I think there is a bit of flaw over there, because, mind you, I will say that I think that Ben Stokes might be 25% of England's team, because not only is he an all-rounder who provides balance, and even if his batting has fallen apart, you still expect that he might do something. His bowling has been very, very good for a good year now. He was England's best bowler versus India, and he's been damn good in this series versus New Zealand as well. But the captaincy element, it really does play a part over here, right? And I feel like England are really going to miss that, because they don't have any natural captain right now in this squad. They'll have to learn on the blocks, and that might take a while. And I think Ben Stokes, it is a bit ironic, isn't it, that the first Baz ball assignment was 4 years ago versus New Zealand, and they win that series 3-0. And the last Baz ball assignment, you know, after which Stokesy retires abruptly, kind of taking a leaf out of Kane's book, but kind of like going on steroids all the while, because he retires mid-spell and then opens the batting. So that's just like anti-Kane in a way, right? But the fact that England don't have a successor in terms of all-rounder or captain, and that his entire cycle is bookended by New Zealand series at home, which he both wins and loses. The start is brilliant. The end is atrocious. I think it's just like, ironic isn't even the word. It's probably fitting. It's poetic. It's karma.
I once made a pair in a club game, which is almost impossible to do. But I've been obsessed with batting my entire life. And so I put that into my new book, The Art of Batting. Being that I'm not very good at that skill, I decided to talk to other people who were. So I hit up as many contacts as I could just to talk about batting. Rahul Dravid, Brian Lara, AB de Villiers, Kumar Sangakkara, Ross Taylor, Susie Bates, Nasser Hussain, Ian Chappell, and so many, many, many more. I wanted batters to talk about how they and their friends made runs, because that is the art of batting.
Yeah, well, there's craziness, you know, throughout as a running theme. And like you say, it's the antithesis of the Kane tenure, which is just, let's calm everything down and let's be good at cricket and be good guys while we're doing it. And you can't give New Zealand any pelters, because they didn't do anything, you know, to cause them. They just performed probably somewhere near the best of their ability, right? With the people that they've got available, you know, Nichols comes in and gets a ton when Kane goes out. All this, it's just a machine that grinds on. They've lost Glenn Phillips, who was the best batter of this series for them, and Matt Henry is the best bowler of the series for them, and their best player, and they're stuffing England, right? They're stuffing England in this third test match. The thing that annoys me is that a lot of the stuffing is down to England's ineptitude and complete refusal to do anything that may be sensible, i.e. play the cricket that gives you the best chance of winning the match. However, going back to Stokes, captaincy, when he started his captaincy, I was loving it because I have watched a succession of England captains, post Vaughan at least, just lying down and playing by the, you know, the old book, which doesn't apply to cricket anymore. It's not even in the same language as cricket now, and just declaring stupidly late when they had the game in the palm of their hand, not knocking the ball about when they should have been blasting, negative bowling, all that crap that was just rubbish to watch for years. Then we get this guy comes in, no coincidence that he's from New Zealand stock, comes in and goes, right, let's go, let's stop all that. And it stokes his own character. You can't have McCullum coming in with whoever else he's playing golf with at the time and saying, this is what we're going to do, lads, and then handing it over to Alistair Cook to kind of push out into the cricketing atmosphere. You need someone like Stokes to hold the flag and wave it proudly, right? And to his credit, he definitely did that. They went too far with it at times, and what they then did is they used this great weapon that they'd created to batter themselves over the head repeatedly. And so they then started losing games using these tactics that previously at the start of their tenure, they were turning in boring draws and narrow defeats into victories by playing this way. And then they started doing the opposite. Then they started turning easy wins into embarrassing, crushing losses. And this latest one, and I'm not saying that they should definitely beat New Zealand, but certainly in terms of the odds, they should be beating New Zealand at home. And when New Zealand are missing all their best players, they shouldn't be handing wickets to them left, right and centre to donate them Test series, right? That, as far as I'm concerned, as an English cricket supporter, I'm done with. I've had enough of. But and as you also you say, Baram, there's no one to take over. They're going to have to give it to Brooke. How mad is that? That's one of the worst innings I've ever seen today.
I genuinely feel that Stokesy is 25% of England's team because there's no natural successor as captain or all-rounder, and the balance is going to be fucked. And this is a team that obsesses over balance, right? Like, they care a fuck ton about it. And, you know, what's fascinating is that when Stokesy takes over the reins of captaincy, England are, you know, in a rut. No. That's too generous, right? England are down in the dumps. There's, you know, bad teams, a pile of shit, and then England, who don't win any test matches, right? And he comes and there's a winning streak. And that New Zealand team, the first series in which England triumphed 3-0, New Zealand played well, really good New Zealand team. This New Zealand team, on the other hand, towards the end of his tenure, the last series that he captains in, it's not the best New Zealand team, right? Like, of course, they have some good bowlers and their pace bowling attack is, you know, quite good, I would say. But then again, as you said, odds suggested that England should have won. And there's a lot that I love about Stokesy, the captain. The umbrella field versus Khwaja, the constant tinkering. Sometimes, you know, maybe a lot of Baz influence over there, but the bumpers at times, right? And generally just batters batting outside of their crease, their modus operandi of attacking. I think they kind of lost their way in between. But initially he was dangling the carrot really well. I'm thinking Rawalpindi. 2022, and then the declarations get a bit weird. Sometimes you felt that, you know, he's tinkering a bit too much. Right now, you don't need to change the field every other over, Stokesy. Maybe you need to keep this one for a bit, right? He does overdo it. And I think Jared wrote that he's the guy who will run through a brick wall for you, but sometimes there's no brick wall to run through. And Stokesy creates that brick wall for himself. And I think that has been a bit of a phenomena. It kind of makes him enigmatic in a way. He's very, very peculiar because he is the main character in his story and he wants to be the main character in everyone's story, and that reflects in his captaincy as well. There are some very odd declarations. There are some field settings where he didn't have to tinker. Like very recently where he takes third slip out, right, in this very test match. And then there are moments where you don't need to go for the bouncer barrage. But England still went for it. So I think that whilst he was the best suited captain in this current crop, he made some blunders. Retiring Jimmy Anderson was a massive one, right? He was the one who brought him back after the original red ball reset in West Indies where they lost. And then to retire Jimmy like that and completely get it wrong, and he's still doing fantastically well in county cricket. I think that he's had some blemishes as well. But overall, we will remember this tenure. These 4 years will remain with us for the rest of our lives because England were, whether they played well or bad, they were watchable.
Yeah, and I think that is one thing about England, and it includes the white ball stuff as well. England are one of the best teams to watch. Not necessarily because they're good. Like quite often, you know, people watch Barcelona for years and years because they, people thought they play great football and all that. England don't play great cricket, but they play compelling cricket, cricket that you are drawn to watching, whether it's because they're chucking games in the bin or whether they're pulling them out of, you know, someone else has chucked a game in the bin and they're pulling it out and setting it on fire and then somehow winning the game themselves, right? So that's all great. But they go on about how wonderful they've done as a partnership or as a group, you know, the McCullum, Stokes, Key thing. They haven't. They've underachieved because the big series that they've had, India, they got stuffed 4-1 away. They drew with India at home when they definitely should have won one of the tests that they lost. So that was 2-2. They drew with Australia at home, having set fire to the first test by declaring in the first innings, right? So they should have won that Ashes series that they've thrown away. And then they absolutely buggered about in the last one. I'm not talking about that one again, but got stuffed 4-1, right? And we're lucky to lose 4-1, having been in front in every test match, right?
I'm going to lose this thought. So I just need to ask you real quick. The Stokes-Key-McCullum partnership was blossoming. Those guys were like circle-jerking each other for the longest time, right? Like, we are the best trio ever, and English cricket is all about entertainment, and we are going to rescue Test cricket. Yada, 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 the result doesn't matter, whatever. They were compelling to watch, they were getting the results, and as soon as the results stopped coming, the pressure started to mount. Do you think that even before the incident at Chelsea's naughtiest nightclub, which I think is the straw that breaks the camel's back, do you think overall the camel was just battered and butchered in that away Ashes series? Because England over kind of index on the Ashes. It's all about the Ashes when it comes to English cricket. It's not about the World Test Championship. They kept quoting that Ashes series in Australia, and it all kind of, boiled down awfully. So do you think that that also had a major reason, or is that one of those factors that propelled Stokes to retire this early? Because clearly Key and Baz aren't losing their jobs, and those relationships are seriously fractured now. We've all read Nick Holt's article that goes over it quite extensively. And there's like none of that bromance anymore over there. I feel like Stokesy is just done.
So I am not sure that Rob Key does keep his job. I would I would not be shocked if when we're recording tomorrow, Bayram, he's already gone. But as far as all that goes, the bit about we're just going to entertain, which they stayed very solidly to, we're entertaining. It doesn't matter that we drew that series 2-2. Wasn't it great? English fans...
Losing a test match by one run is the greatest thing ever to happen. Right? That's tough.
When you've declared and all that sort of thing. When you've declared at the wrong time. Anyway, so they did all that. And for a while, as the English public, the public bought it because, well, it's much more fun and we were losing anyway, right? And now we've actually got some all-timer players in our team as well, by the way. We've actually got some brilliant cricketers and we can beat the big boys. And so they've told us that all this mucking about in all these series has been because we're so focused on this Ashes. A reminder that there was an Australian team that were there for the taking. The batting wasn't great and all the bowlers were injured. All of the good ones were injured. So England had, other than Stark, England had Australia there for the taking. And I've said this before, back when we beat Australia 3-1 away, they were there for the taking. They didn't have a very good team. And England not over-prepared. They didn't leave any stone unturned. They prepared wonderfully well. They had loads of plans and they battered Australia. If you remember...
They over-prepared this time. You know
if
that,
you remember,
right?
Bayram, they said, Key himself came out and said, what is the point of us selecting anybody that bowls 80 miles an hour with the keeper up? Because we're not going to face that. And it's a joke. So that told us that they don't consider that sort of cricket as valid. And they also don't practice it. So then they had Boland... Nisa bowling with the keeper up and they got stuffed. Then New Zealand come over here and do the exact same thing, which New Zealand had already intimated they were going to do because they'd done it before. And England had no idea what to do. Not only did they didn't have someone themselves that could do it, they didn't know how to bat against it. And their two best bats, Root and Brooke, got done by the same guy in the same way and a brilliant bit of wicketkeeping. So they don't learn the stupid. Anyway, they went over to Australia and that's when the public stopped buying it. You can only be sold this muck for so long. And when Jeetan Patel, as Jake Lingard keeps telling me, came out and said, oh, well, we never said the Ashes was the be-all and end-all. That's when everyone lost faith, right? He came out and said that publicly. And then they just played back the clips where they said, this is everything. This is the biggest series of our lives. That's what McCullum was saying. It's the biggest series of our lives, is what he said.
They retired, Jimmy, because of the Ashes in Australia. Well, newsflash, Jimmy Anderson would have done really well in that series because Scotty Boland is someone who relies on the wobble seam delivery, and Jimmy Anderson is the guy who made that delivery mainstream. And both of those guys are, well, Scotty Boland isn't as old as Jimmy, but, you know, he ain't no spring chicken either. I think some of this decision-making really kind of screwed them over. And Stokesy being the captain bears the brunt of a lot of it, but I think you hold Baz accountable, you hold Key accountable, you hold the Richards of the ECB accountable, right? Everyone gets to share that criticism, in my opinion. But with Stokesy, I feel like he was a bit of a runaway train in the way he looked at the sport. That I am going to go out there and bang, bang, bang. But it's weird how his batting completely changes when he becomes captain. Everyone's batting aggressively but Stokes, right? Apart from the odd innings. And then with the ball, I think it's post-operation where he actually really starts nailing it. And I think in the last couple of years, he's done exceptionally well. And, you know, when I came over to England for the Lord's Test where Jimmy was playing his final test, Stokesy was bowling 9-over, 10-over spells. And I was like, why are you doing this, man? You just had an operation. But that's just who he was. He was not someone who probably overthought when he was not playing cricket. He probably just overthought when he was on the field. And he really wanted to make an impact. And I think, like, if you look at the great English cricketers of, you know, the modern era, you wouldn't have him ahead of Root, Cook, Jimmy, perhaps even Broad, because Broad has longevity on his side. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Rob Barron, convince me that he's not number five.
If it's just red ball, then fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you bring in white ball in, Butler's ahead.
Sure.
But I think, again, my problem with Stokes is he is not the thinking and the let's try and do this, let's try. I love all that. But I think a lot of the time it was the forefront of his head was how does the Ben Stokes show play better, not how does England win? And that has been proven beyond all doubt today. And in that interview he did with Athers, when he was talking about the 8-for-15 Stuart Broad test match, and he said that was the match with my catch, right?
You cannot do that, Ben Stokes.
It wasn't the match of Ben Stokes's catch. He took a really good catch in the slips. But the story of that game was so mental. And I was so discombobulated that I proposed to my now wife on that day because I didn't know what was happening with the world. And it was not Ben Stokes catch day. It was Stuart Broad takes 8-for-15 and England win an Ashes test match day, right? It was an absolutely incredible day of test match cricket. Mm-hmm. So that tells me that Stokes... But fast forwarding to all this fallout that will happen now, what Stokes and his PR team have very cleverly done here is they've made the narrative of the finish, which could have happened in a lot of different ways. He could have gone out in disgrace with an off-field indiscretion. Now, that definitely hasn't happened because I don't think he did do very much by all accounts, other than break the curfew that he himself was part of the team that set, which is stupid. I don't think he did very much on that particular night out. I'm sure he's done way worse stuff that we've never heard about on nights out. He could have gone out in disgrace. He could have had the only end of his career that I don't think could have happened was a long, slow decline in form with bat and ball, and eventually they just kick him out the door. I don't think that was ever going to happen either. I think he was most likely to quit on his own terms, which is after a big century, because he's probably got one more in him or a fifer that wins a match or something like that. But that wasn't happening. And his body's letting him down more than it was, and he's batting gone now. He can't bat anymore, so it's just his bowling. So he's probably
Every time he gets dismissed, he looks at the stumps and looks at you know the pitch in awe, as if he's gotten dismissed by a worldie. And, you know, more often than not, it's a pretty straightforward delivery that he misses. So that also adds to his antics. But
people anymore. Bayern, let me just finish about how he's going out. So he's managed to get the narrative, and I think it's quite well thought out, that now it's... He got forced out by the suits because they didn't back him over the latest thing, and he didn't do very much. Mm. And I'm sure he didn't on this particular night out. They've obviously had enough and were like, well, we're gonna slap him on the wrist here. And he said, if you slap me on the wrist, I'm quitting. They've managed to calm all that down over a fortnight. And the narrative now is Ben Stokes has to go because of the suits. And now what's going to happen is the public, mark my words, the public will be all on Team Stokes' side. They will turn against the ECB, as I heard them shouting towards the end of the game. Key and... lots of people called Richard and probably someone called Brendan will go. I don't think they can afford to get rid of McCullum. I think that's why they haven't. They can't afford. They gave him a stupid contract. He's allowed to go around playing golf with Phil Tufnell on Netflix TV shows while he's contracted to manage England, which is a full joke on £1 million plus a year. They can't afford to sack him because that would look utterly ridiculous. So they're waiting for him to hand his you know, bat and his gloves and his passport and his golf clubs and his pint glass in, which he won't. But I think heads will now roll because Stokes has played the only card that I think he could have done as far as the PR machine goes and says, look, I'm out, but I'm sure as hell taking those guys down with me. And that's what the players did with him today when they all set fire to their own innings when they were batting this afternoon. That was them saying, all right, this is a protest. Some people call it a dirty protest today. We're going out like this. We're absolute toys out the pram, middle fingers up to the establishment. And as such, stuff has to happen this week, and it will do.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, look, it had to boil down to something. I think Stokes kind of brings the narrative in his favor because he is now leaving on his own terms, kind of, but what public might perceive over here is that, you know, he's being forced out. That relationship became untenable, the three-way between Key, Baz and Stokesy. And even Baz's comments after, you know, the curfew gate incident, he first said he was annoyed, he was frustrated, then he was angry, then at one point he was sad and he was feeling for Ben Stokes. We never quite understood where he was at. And I think that with the whole narrative spinning, Baz never knew what line to take over there. But the interesting thing over here is, you know, with respect to how he's kind of bowed out, is that he's yet again made the conversation about himself entirely. And I kind of, like, appreciate that, okay, you've stayed true to yourself. That is exactly what you would have done, and you've just gone on and finished on that note. But I want to end this show by just asking you. Have you ever met him? Ben Stokes?
No.
So I've been in a couple or maybe three to four press conferences. My first ever assignment in a press box was England's first Baz ball tour to Pakistan, not the second one. The second one was more enjoyable from my perspective. But the first one, you know, was great for England. And I mean, he walks into the room, the press conference room, and all of a sudden you are awestruck. There's a lot of aura going over there. He was an aura farmer, right? He's a huge dude. And even though he wouldn't say the most intelligent things, but he kind of commanded, not respect, but his presence was there. It could be felt. And you were like, oh shit, that's Ben Stokes. And I mean, there were other players in these press conferences, man. I've been to a Jimmy Anderson press conference. Babar Azam was pretty big back in those days. None of those people had that. And I feel like he was just this larger-than-life character on the field, even arguably off the field, but not in a positive way. But on the field, when he's on one, you can't not appreciate Ben Stokes. I just felt like he is the guy you want to watch play cricket. And, you know, when it comes to aura farmers, Baz McCullum was also one, so maybe he fed off that energy a bit. I don't know, man. I would feel that presence and I would want to listen to what he has to say, even if it wasn't the most intelligent thing in the world. I'm still curious to know what a drop of jizz of Ben Stokes would do to your skin. How would your skin react to that? But you've never experienced this.
Echo.
And maybe I was too young in my career, but I felt that, man.
Yeah, I mean, to a certain extent, right, you can't really choose the cricketers that you fall in love with. You can't really.
Yeah.
And you just kind of hope that they don't do utterly disgraceful things off the field. Now, some of the things that Stokes has done, nobody would be proud of, right? But I do not deny that the guy is box office and you do kind of want to keep turning the pages. Whether you're reading them from a point of view of I love this guy and everything about him or this guy drives me mental, it's neither here nor there because you're still turning the pages, right? And when we watch cricket constantly, as you and I and lots of other people do, you are more drawn towards the guys that are exciting and are making stuff happen. My criticism is he didn't make England cricket team win enough times. And that was his job, right? That's the job that he gets paid loads of money to do. Did he make the game entertaining? Yes. Will we still be talking about him in months that go by? Absolutely we will. Is this the end of the story? I'll stop asking myself questions in a minute. Probably not, right? I'd be shocked if he doesn't come back in some capacity.
Wow.
He's done it before. I think when the heads are rolled and they send him a text saying Ashes question mark, he may well jump on the plane, you know, if England need him then. Also, this is another thing that will happen, because I said, well, obviously, you know, LSG will sign him because they're the dumbest franchise in IPL history. He's, you know, this Melbourne amalgamation of the Stars and the Renegades is absolutely made for Ben Stokes, who I think is already...
It's not happening, by the way, this year. There's still the Stars and the Stars and the
Renegades.
Maybe
the year after.
Delayed.
But Saurabh told me he's not allowed to play in the IPL next year. And Ben Stokes is 35 because of the rules, right? And Ben Stokes is 35. I guarantee you those rules will be rewritten and probably have been already by the time this podcast will be finished. And Ben Stokes will be allowed to play in the IPL next year. LSG are going to sign him, spoiler alert. Or if Dhoni can't play, then he'll be wheeled out as the MS Dhoni mascot award. But he is going to now be, I mean, at least in test match cricket for England. Maybe if he'd have played another five tests, we'd have been saying not. But at least he definitely commands his place as a cricketer in the England cricket team, even if that's a number eight who can sometimes bat and a decent enough bowler. But he absolutely doesn't in an IPL team. I think he will be on the circuit now. He will be playing in the Big Bash and bowling junk and probably batting wherever he wants and all that. And he's going to be a real pain to watch for the next 3 or 4 years as he ekes every penny out of the rest of his cricket career. Fair enough, right? I don't think there are many people out there that wouldn't do the same, right? If people want to pay me to do something I'm rubbish at, show me where the money is. Do you know what I mean? Absolutely no problem. Some people would say that talking nonsense is something I'm rubbish at, but I don't get paid, so it's fine. But I'm wheeling into the Stokes main character syndrome here. No one cares about what I do with my time, but lots of people do care what Ben Stokes does with his. Now, Bayram, my question to you is, what do you think he does next and what do you want him to do next?
I think this comment by Mookie is brilliant to start off. He says, does this mean he has no curfews? Of course, now he gets to party. But, you know, like, I don't know what he does here on. Maybe he takes the Freddy route, man. Maybe he goes into boxing, for all I know. He does seem like the sort of dude who loves a fight. So maybe boxing is the answer. Maybe he goes into beer drinking challenges, right? Like he could be that guy who's chugging beers for money and he is the celebrity kind of draw. But I do think there is some sort of, I wouldn't say truth to your statement, but it does fascinate me that this might not be the end of Ben Stokes. He might get that text message someday. England might be desperate for an all-rounder, a pace bowling all-rounder in particular, which is a rare commodity to begin with. So I think that anything can happen, really. But for me, when it comes to his legacy, I'll always remember him as a warrior, someone who left everything out on the field, a flawed character, a seriously flawed character, an exciting captain, but also someone who made plenty of mistakes. I don't think he was a perfect captain. He was just an upgrade on whatever England had seen thus far. And I think Ben Stokes just, you know, he was the sort of cricketer who you had to experience. The numbers will never do him justice. He was fortunate, but that fortune brought him that clutch trademark, right? And he has a fair bit of those knocks. So I think that I feel very fortunate to have experienced this career from start to finish. And look, I'm a sucker for left-handed batters, and I fell in love with Stokesy because of his batting. And at the end of his career, I just wanted him to bowl 10 over spells. That's what I was in for, because I knew he couldn't bat anymore. I hope it's not the end. I hope that he just unretires instantly and he's featuring versus Pakistan in the three-match test series. But part of, you know, his medical history tells me that this actually might be the end as well. It could very well be the end, full stop, because he's had plenty of issues with the knee, with the shoulder. You could tell that he is really putting his body on the line when he was going full throttle for England. I don't know what happens from here. I just feel lucky to have witnessed it, even the crazy bit. Right? Like, even the whack job part of Stokes' career, which makes no sense. And you wonder, had these guys not planned trips to Noosa and gone to Dubai in the middle of an India test series, or, you know, prioritized golf, whiskey, cigars, maybe they could have achieved something. That'll always remain as a footnote in the Ben Stokes legacy. But, you know, I still feel like it was a fun ride. I mean, I've got no skin in this game. I had fun.
Yeah, if the lesson that people learn from the Ben Stokes career is fortune favours the brave, no problem. Like, try and make stuff happen more. Try and win games rather than stand there trying not to lose them. That is great. You know, I've said what I've said about the individual and who cares what I think to some extent. But, yeah, the guy has been box office. This almost definitely, it can't possibly be the end of the story, Bayram. It's not impossible that everyone above him has lost their job by the time Pakistan come into town and he's playing again. That isn't impossible. Yeah. I'd be surprised if he plays again for England in this calendar year. But I would also be surprised if he doesn't play for England again. He will go back to Durham and probably, if last week's anything to go by, score some runs, maybe find that he actually loves batting again, because he's not looked like that for some considerable time. And then maybe he's knocking on the door, and maybe Jimmy comes back with him. Maybe they get Stuart Broad to come back. Like, who knows? You cannot rule anything out, just as you can't with Pakistan, who are maniacs. You absolutely can't with England either.
Yeah, I mean, imagine Key gets sacked and then bam. Reverse Uno cards, left, right, and center. You never know. Abhilash with a super chat that we completely missed. My apologies, but I'm happy that we caught it before we ended the show. Abhilash says, Rob, you nailed it. Pretending has always been a problem with him. Imagine this, a leader of a team who has set the rules, breaks them blatantly, then wants it to go away because of his aura. Not a great trendsetter for the next generation. I don't think he's a great role model in terms of personality. And by the way, everything that Rob has mentioned, I don't disagree with that either. I just say that I loved watching him play. I think I've been pretty vocal about that, right? I don't think Rob makes any useless point over here. Everything that he has mentioned on the show and throughout our little partnership when we have been talking about England and Ben Stokes, he's always been bang on the money. He's the anti-PR machine to Ben Stokes. But yeah, the pretender bit, I think there's a solid claim to that. All right then. So that'll be the end of this show, guys. I have to go and watch Canada play at the FIFA World Cup, but I won't be ending this show just like I didn't start it. We've got Rob's kid, Bobby, who'll do that for us. So take it away, Bobby.
So I think that Ben Stokes is a bit of a silly guy because he made his own rule, but then he broke it straight away.
Thank you, Bobby. And would you like to say, this is what Bobby's been drawing while we've been on. What does it say, Bob? What
It says, don't go to nightclubs.
Well, you're on the right track, Bobby. I mean, you're going to have your time where... Yeah, I mean, yeah, your dad absolutely never did. He was a very sober guy throughout.
But and then later, what does it say there?
That's party.
Yeah.
All righty.
That's what he's doing right now. That actually looks quite a lot like Stokes as well. And that's how he plays cricket now as well, Bobby, just waving the bat around. Right, do you want to say goodbye to everyone, Bob?
I love how Bobby gave Stokes two sets of stumps because she didn't trust him with one. Anyway.
Right, beat the buzzer, Bobby.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Well, Bobby has beat the buzzer. And just to remind you guys, go follow Combox everywhere. Like, share, subscribe. And we'll be back tomorrow, Rob and I, to review this test match at Trent Bridge. But till then, you guys, soak it in. In fact, let that sink in. Open the door and physically let the sink in because there's a heat wave outside. The sink will melt, right? We'll see you tomorrow. Take care. Enjoy yourselves. And goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast on the Combox Network. There is an ad-free version of this you can find by supporting us on Patreon at Good Areas Podcast. You can also access our Discord channel there. Please like, subscribe, and rate this show. Every one of these helps us. If there was a guest on a show, you can find their links in the show notes. Huge thanks to Rakshit, Ishit, and everyone else who helps us get our content out there. If you want to know more about us, head to combox.tv. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.